When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk Podcast. This is the first time we're recording this on video, a live recording. On this week's episode, we discuss why NBC Sports needs to step up the quality of their Premier League coverage, our thoughts on the new Messi documentary series from Apple, the trials and tribulations of Fantasy Premier League, and NWSL's new TV deal. Plus, I'm sure, Kartik, we will discuss a lot more too. Kartik, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. How about you?
I'm doing okay. It's just, it's a crazy time of the year. Actually, right now is all right, right? Because it's international break. It's a rare moment to actually take a deep breath. I think it's interesting too, because we did a poll on Twitter, on X this week to ask in terms of what people are most looking forward to watching, whether it was the World Cup 2026 qualifiers, whether it's the Euro 2024 qualifiers, if it's the US against Germany friendly, or just give me club soccer back. And any guesses, because I know you're not on Twitter any longer, but any guesses which of those ones won the vote?
I would say either the World Cup qualifiers or wanting club football back.
Yeah, I think about like 62%, the majority wanted club soccer back. It is interesting, right? Because it's two different audiences, I think, in many ways. It's, you mean, you have your club soccer audience and then you have your international soccer audience. Obviously, we're on the club soccer side. We've talked about this in the past before. Second place was US against Germany, which I think will be an interesting friendly against.
Which I didn't even know was taking place, to be honest with you, until you just told me. So, okay.
Right. Okay. Well, for listeners or viewers who haven't had a chance to watch or listen to the World Soccer Talk podcast before, really what it comes down to, it's an intersection kind of a cross between talking about soccer, of course, but also streaming and pro-rel. I mean, the pro-rel topic comes up almost every episode, as does streaming, as does soccer. This podcast has, in different forms in the past, we've focused heavily on streaming, heavily on soccer, and pro-rel has been a common thread too. So the first thing I want to talk about, Kartik, before we even get into all of that, is Fantasy Premier League. I mean, I've been playing it for years. I know you have. How's it going on your side in terms of what you're doing in your Fantasy Premier League?
Not particularly well. I mean, I had a rough start to the season. I play in a competitive league. I don't play the Premier League's official game, which is, I think, easier. I play in a competitive league of former Fort Lauderdale Strikers employees. We were Strikers employees when it started, the league. That's how long we've been running it. Actually some former players in the league also, so former Striker players and employees. And we are now, we have such a critical mass of people in it that have stayed with us for doing this for 10 years or so, that we're going to divide. And it's so difficult because when you have 20 people playing or 18 people playing, whatever it is in a given year, it's difficult to construct a squad. So we're going to go to Pro Rel next year. But it's very competitive. And it's something that's really interesting, Chris, because everybody who's playing the game in our league has worked in a closed league or played in a closed league in the United States. Yeah, yet we're going to implement pro rel. So that's really kind of the takeaway is, like, in order to be competitive, you know, we made the decision to increase competition, create a situation where people were going out and making the proper decisions with their squad in order to maybe allow the squads that are less competitive the people who are less competitive to be more competitive. You need to split the league and implement promotion and relegation. So it's a competitive tool.
Yeah.
It's about competition.
It's interesting too, because I mean, within the last 10 years, there was a buzzword going around called gamification. And they were talking about all these different apps out there. Like, how do you gamify it? How do you add challenges or badges? Badges are the thing. You can earn merit badges, etc. And it's interesting too, because, I mean, you got Pro Rel, which is the ultimate gamification. You got a Pro Rel in a fantasy Premier League that now that you have, you mean, they're actually putting it into place because you have so many players, you're going to split it into two different divisions. Even the translation app, Duolingo, has promotion and relegation in there. You want to kind of improve your score, move up the table into the different leagues, or if you're not doing so well, you get relegated to the
bottom. Oh, and flow. If you take a week off, you get relegated. So I used to do Duolingo for many years, and I got promoted to the top division and would stay in the top division. But you would have to, and you would almost time. You would have to know when your week ended, your cycle ended, accrue enough points, go out there and do the things you needed to do every week. So if you took, let's say you went, you were busy one week and you couldn't do Duolingo, you get relegated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Fantasy Premier League for me, I mean, this season so far, it's probably like many of our viewers and listeners, I mean, it's the week that I have, I mean, Isaac and Dan Byrne and all these new, Almiron, all these players from Newcastle in my squad. And then I'm like, okay, I'm going to go ahead because they have a tough Champions League match coming up. I'm going to go ahead and take them out of the squad and put in some other players. And it's always the same the way, right? As soon as you take out those star players, all of a sudden that week, I mean, they score a million points and then you're like, oh.
Yeah, it happened to me last year when I was struggling at the beginning of the year. I took McAllister out of the squad. He got a hat trick against Leicester. Then I took someone else out of the squad. I think it was Guillamarish, speaking of Newcastle, he scored. And you don't just in the league I'm in, scoring goals is important, but it's also things like clearances and duels won, things like that, keeping clean sheets. And I used to be really good at it a couple of years ago when I had it's a 3 points for a win system in our league. When a couple of years ago, when I had something like 80 points and was pushing for the league title, I had the Midas touch of thinking, okay, because you look at the opponent. That's what you always do. Okay, Arsenal is playing Spurs this week, but Chelsea is playing Luton. So let's pick the Chelsea players, right? And that used to really work for me. Now it seems to be the opposite. It seems to be the thing I've come around to is if you're playing a better team, it's almost better to play those guys because the games are more open.
Mm-hmm.
So it's getting confusing and it's gotten quite difficult in terms of that. I mean, even this week I made a mistake. Pau Torres was one of my early picks in the draft. I played him each of the 7 match days prior to this. I drop him and he scores a goal. Granted, the assist was by Watkins, and Watkins has gotten me lots of points this year. So that's one guy that's come through for me. But really, unfortunately, it's difficult, and it's really based on matchups.
So let's move on to streaming. I mean, we talked kind of a little bit about soccer. In terms of the streaming side of things, lots of different news going on. We'll get to the NWSL news in a little bit, as well as talking about the new documentary, Messi Meets America from Apple. But I want to talk about the trials and tribulations also of streaming. And if you look at everyone from NBC Sports, CBS Sports, ESPN, kind of the 3 main English language broadcasters in the United States, I would argue that all of them are going through some issues of different degrees, some worse than others. Jonathan Rapley, who's one of our listeners and viewers, sent this in, Kartik, and I want to read this before we get to the listener mailbag a little bit later. And he says, can we talk about how NBC pundits are not very good at their job? They must have been the only pundits in the world who agreed with the referees in the Spurs against Liverpool game. They are too scared to have an opinion. I'm not asking for Roy Keane, but can't we have pundits question the game? And this is in regards, of course, to the massive controversy, the VAR controversy in that match where Luis Diaz scored the goal and it was ruled as offside, even though it obviously wasn't. We all know that now. They made a huge mistake. And at halftime, what Jonathan is talking about, I mean, it's Robbie Musto kind of agreeing with the referees, which in hindsight, I mean, what the heck was... I think anyone who watched that game in real time, watched it in the moment and saw that, were puzzled. I think even... I think it was Peter Drury seemed a bit puzzled too in the commentary. And was it Lee Dixon, I think, was like, yeah, that looked offside. That looked onside to me. But Kartik, what's your opinion about that specifically, but also just NBC Sports' coverage of the Premier League as a whole, which most of the viewers and listeners know that we're massive fans of English soccer, soccer around the world, but many of our roots come from watching, thousands of hours of English soccer. But what's your thoughts on NBC's coverage, and in particular that moment?
Well, that moment wasn't very good, obviously, in terms of it's difficult to make those spot decisions, right? And that Diaz goal looked onside the whole time, and we now have the released audio, et cetera, from it. But Robbie Musto in general, like his analysis is very, very predictable, very... very standard. It's hardly analysis, really.
It's different though, right? When it's the two Robbies paired together, they get too complacent with each other. I think when it's Tim Howard and Robbie Musto, or Stephen Warnock and Robbie Musto, or Danny Higginbotham and Robbie Musto, then you have that contrast where they're not agreeing with everything, and they're... I think you're getting more out of Robbie Musto.
Oh, yeah. I think the same works for Robbie Earle. If he's paired with Tim Howard or Danny Higginbotham or Stephen Warnock, you get more out of him. I think, unfortunately, those two are very comfortable together. I have seen deeper analysis from them when they do their podcasts. So I know they're both capable of it, but maybe it's the short format of the NBC studio. Maybe it's the it's the placating of I don't know, placating of fans of big clubs, because the other thing I don't like about the two Robbies is that there is very predictable analysis when it comes to the matches in general. They're very focused on the big six, which surprises me for two guys whose careers were spent at what we would consider lesser clubs. In the case of Robbie Earle, he was part of a great side at Wimbledon, right? The crazy gang. And Robbie Musto was on a fantastic Borough team, a Borough team I enjoyed. He had Robinelli there for a couple seasons, but a team that had to scrape, a team that got relegated, even though they got to both cup finals that year. So I expect kind of more deeper analysis of the Luton Towns and the Bournemouths from them than we get. It's almost like you need Danny Higginbotham to come in to give that analysis. And then, in terms of Tim Howard, I think he's gotten better through the years, for sure. In terms of watching a match, looking at the tactics, noticing if a guy isn't making the right run or if a guy isn't finding a pocket of space or playing the right ball at the right time. You don't get much of that analysis from the two Robbies. Now, on this VAR thing specifically,
Before we get to the VAR thing, just to chime in there. I mean, Tim Howard, I mean, his comment about Chelsea and about Christian Pulisic, how Christian Pulisic was brilliant at Chelsea. Come on. I mean, that's one thing. The other thing, I think my issue with NBC Sports' coverage is the halftime coverage is weak, really weak. I, I hardly ever get any really good insight or good intelligence at halftime. And I've stopped watching the pre-match. I've stopped watching the halftime. I've stopped watching the post-match. So when I'm tuning in for the games, and you know what I mean, I'm not getting the level of analysis. So what I'm doing oftentimes is actually listening to the radio, listening to BBC Radio or Sky Sports or other or social media, and getting insight that way instead of actually watching the TV coverage at halftime or pre-match or post-match.
On the Pulisic issue specifically from Howard, there were fleeting moments where guys are brilliant. He was brilliant in moments. I mean, there's no question from a technical standpoint, he might even be a top 10 or 15 player in the world. But there are fitness issues constantly with him. A critique I made his final year at Dortmund, which he's sort of fixed but not totally, is his positioning sense, not making the right run at the right time, not tucking back defensively in quite the way you need to. I mean, actually, some of the criticisms I've made of Pulisic, this is going to offend a lot of listeners, I've made of Phil Foden also. I have some issues with Phil Foden's game that I picked up on, that, by the way, Pep has picked up on also, and Gareth Southgate has picked up on also, which is why Southgate doesn't want to play him centrally for England. Everyone's entitled to their opinion, but I think Howard's analysis was a little off there. But in general, he's given us more than the two Robbies. The halftime analysis is worthless, right? Unless you want to watch highlights of the first half, which they do a good job of doing. I mean, NBC's production is so crisp. That's the thing.
Yeah.
So I think because the production is so crisp, the graphics are always timed really well, unlike some of the other networks that broadcast soccer, we tend to sometimes overlook what's actually being said in the studio or on the broadcast. Now, I have to say, the match broadcasts themselves have gotten infinitely better since Arlo White was replaced by Peter Drury and now John Champion. And you're getting more out of Graham Lasso. You're getting more out of Lee Dixon. Graham Lasso was fantastic this past weekend. Arsenal, Manchester City.
But if I'm CBS Sports, right, or ESPN, and I'm looking at their coverage, NBC's coverage of the Premier League, and I know that the rights will be up in a few years. I mean, time is flying by, right? 2028-29 season will be the first of a brand new deal partnered with the Championship and the EFL, a massive package there. I mean, it's still a few years away, but if I'm CBS Sports or ESPN looking at NBC's coverage, I'm like, okay, this is good, but we can do a lot better. We can raise the bar several levels and actually do a better job than NBC Sports is doing.
Yeah, but I don't think I don't think ESPN has the ability to broadcast the Premier League because of their programming commitments to college sports on Saturdays. And the fact that they've signed those deals long-term, and if you follow the media industry, you realize this has really put a hurt on Disney's finances. One of the biggest factors in Disney's financial issues, if you want to call it now, is tying down these college conferences to long-term deals with ESPN, in addition to the loss of the cricket rights in India. By the way, I want to apologize to the viewers and listeners. It's suddenly gotten very dark on my end. Typical Florida, a thunderstorm has rolled in. It was bright and sunny when we started this, and now it's dark, and you can probably hear rains coming down in torrents in the background. But yeah, in terms of CBS, Chris, I think they can do a better job. But which version of CBS will we get? Will we get the Champions League version of CBS, or will we get the version of CBS that broadcasts CONCACAF?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, will we get the version of CBS that's broadcast on NWSL? We'll have some news on that later in the show, by the way. Or do we get the version that's broadcast some of these other random things involving,
Serie A.
Serie A, right.
Yeah.
So which version are we going to get, right? There doesn't seem to be much consistency in their programming. But one thing I can say for CBS is I can say several things for them, but I think one major thing we have to acknowledge is they must have done some degree of market analysis on each product. Okay, here are the people who are watching NWSL. These are their preferences. We're going to tailor the broadcast to them. Here are the types of people who watch Champions League. Here are their preferences. We're going to tailor the broadcast to them. Same thing with Serie A, same thing with CONCACAF, et cetera. So I assume with the Premier League, they would do something similar. Now, the question is, would they have the kind of knowledge of English football? I mean, NBC put a lot into this in terms of research, in terms of developing the culture, understanding the culture around the sport, although I would say that's waned a little bit. One thing to also factor in is by the time this contract comes up for renewal, NBC will no longer be linked with Sky, presumably. Comcast will have sold Sky by that time. So that may give an outsider a little bit of an advantage, or more of an advantage than they have now.
Yeah, going back to NBC for a minute, I mean, the other part of it too is just Peacock. I mean, we haven't talked about this in the podcast before, but the last few weeks there's been some major issues with streaming. That's always an issue. In 2028, 29, who knows by then, I mean, in terms of Peacock, Peacock might have 75% of the games. I mean, every year it seems to increase more and more slightly in terms of how many exclusive games that they have. CBS, you're right. They're all over the place. I mean, some really good coverage on the Champions League, I think. When Mika's not there, it changes. And we saw Freddie Lundberg recently on the Champions League set. He's been a really good analyst, partnered with Thierry Henry. We saw some really good, hardcore, intelligent, insightful analysis, which we're not getting with NBC's coverage. NBC's, I think, much better when Stephen Warnock is there and Danny Higginbotham, but Danny's doing MLS games, so he's hardly ever available to do that. When Rebecca's fine. I mean, Rebecca's still, I mean, the best in terms of presentation. But what about ESPN? We haven't really talked much about them. I mean, they've got, you know, obviously La Liga coverage. They've picked up NWSL, which we'll get to in a little bit. But ESPN's coverage, for all the faults or kind of criticisms we've given about NBC's coverage, and then CBS's coverage, which I think their analysis on the USMNT and CONCACAF is pretty weak, in my opinion. But what about ESPN? What's your thoughts on ESPN and how what job they're doing right now? Bundesliga too, of course. I almost forgot the Bundesliga.
Yeah, I think the Bundesliga is kind of become a throwaway if there's a La Liga game or something important in La Liga happening at the same time. They do a good job broadcasting the matches. Derek Ray continues to be the best in the business. You've got a situation where you have German-based analysts that are able to provide a lot of information, whether it's Archie Rintutt or Jan Arnefort, although he's in the UK a lot also, right? He's doing a lot of coverage of England, of the English team for ESPN as well. I don't think they knew he was that versatile when they signed him. They signed him because he had done Bundesliga in Germany, right, for German television, not realizing, I think, yeah, keep in mind, he played much of his career in England, even for some squads like Swindon Town, right, Sheffield United, right? He played for some obscure squads. So he knows the English scene. So he's been a real asset. And then I think Kay Murray is such a fantastic host and so well prepared and well studied on these things. Dan Thomas, to me, best studio host in the business, gets the most out of the analysts around him. Shaka Hislop, Craig Burley continue to be guys. Okay, so the question started with Musto not really saying anything, right? That's where we started this discussion. Earl not saying anything. Burley and Hislop, they don't care who they offend. They call it like it is. Those two guys, and actually, I would say Frank LaBeouf is in that same category now. So ESPN seems to have no issue with having people take shots at products that they may have the rights to, people that they may have relationships with in the game. They have empowered their studio analysts and their studio hosts to probe and to do the job they need to do, Stevie Nichol as well. And there's a lot of criticism. I know our listeners, a lot of them don't like Alejandro Moreno. I think he's actually, you know, maybe it's his style. Okay, I can see where his style annoys people. I think the content of his analysis has gradually gotten better through the years and is pretty good now. And it's probably being surrounded by the Burleys and the LaBeoufs and the Hislops. You have to raise your game. If you're going to keep up with Shaka Hislop, you got to be watching the game and analyzing it at a high level.
I think Vale Moreno, I think actually it's helped that ESPN no longer has MLS rights. So I mean, Alejandro Moreno right now to me is kind of the go-to guy for Real Madrid analysis, or he's the go-to guy for La Liga analysis. I mean, or even he's done Bundesliga. I mean, so to me, you're getting better analysis out of him because it's not him. He's not the only guy just talking about Major League Soccer, which kind of happened in the past before. What I would say about ESPN and NBC Sports, to me, is they're very formulaic in terms of the way that they cover the sports. So you could have, for example, I mean, so ESPN's coverage of the Bundesliga feels quite often a lot like La Liga. NBC's coverage kind of is formulaic. They'll change things up now and again. CBS Sports, I would say, is the least formulaic. I mean, in terms of the way that they go ahead and cover the game, in terms of all the different, leagues or competitions, they're doing it with a different type of style, and that I like a lot. That's what kind of is warming me up to. Hey, maybe it's ESPN working with CBS Sports for the Premier League for 2028-29 onwards.
So I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. I know we have news to break, but teaser, I think we've already kind of given it away, or at least part of it. NWSL, they're going to be, at least in theory, working together for the next few years, ESPN and CBS. Yeah. So does that maybe, you think, Chris, create a relationship where they're very comfortable working with each other on soccer products and properties that it may just streamline right into the Premier League?
I think so. But, I mean, because it makes sense in terms of sharing it, you mean where they can say, okay, hey, ESPN might have a whole bunch of college football games on, so their windows of time might be limited, and then CBS might say, hey, okay, we'll go ahead and pick up those games and we'll show it on these channels or Paramount Plus or ESPN Plus. I think it worked before, right, when we had Fox Sports and we had Setanta and ESPN, the three of them sharing Premier League rights. Now, I mean, for the last, over 10 years, it's been NBC Sports, and it's either, but even then, it could be Peacock, it could be NBC, it could be USA, sometimes it could be CNBC. So sometimes it could be many, many different channels having the games. But yeah, let's talk about the NWSL deal. It hasn't been officially announced as we're recording this one, but according to Sportico, it's going to be ESPN and CBS working together starting in 2024 onwards, in conjunction with Amazon and Scripps. Now, Scripps has many different over-the-air networks, including ION is one of them. But then with ESPN, you've got ESPN, ESPN Plus, all the different channels there, CBS Sports, Paramount Plus, Amazon Prime Sports. So to me, the only jeopardy about this, Kartik, is I'm sure it's going to bring in a lot more money for the Women's League, which is great, is it's going to make things even more confusing than they have been in the past in terms of, you know, who's showing the game this weekend or who's got this game. You might have to have three or four different streaming subscriptions or cable subscriptions just to be able to watch all the games, if you want to watch all the games, or to watch your team. Maybe one week it's on one channel, the next week it's on a different streaming service, etc. What are your thoughts on the NWSL deal that they've been able to sign?
Yeah, I mean, this is the first year, really, that it was all unified on Paramount Plus. They had kept their foot with Twitch and Amazon for a little longer than they probably should have. I don't know what the details of this new deal are going to be. NWSL, as you mentioned, has not announced it yet. But if the Amazon component is Twitch again, or if it's Amazon Prime, what it is. In terms of CBS's portion, I assume the games that were buried on CBS Sports Network, which let's quite frankly call it what it is. When you put games on CBS Sports Network, you're burying them. It's not a Nielsen rated channel. It's not a channel.
It's better than FS2.
Is it? I don't know. Is it in as many homes as FS2? FS2's actually the numbers for FS2 are now, because everybody's cutting the cord, right? Their numbers, the gap between FS2 and like FS1 and ESPN isn't as great as it used to be. Mm-hmm. But maybe those games are going to go to ESPN or ESPN2, which is really good news, I think.
Yeah.
Just from a visibility standpoint. I thought maybe Turner would get in on this because of, or Warner Discovery would get in on this because of their relationship with the U.S. Federation now, their history covering soccer abroad, Discovery's history covering soccer abroad. For those who don't know, TNT now has the Premier League rights, one of the Premier League packages in the UK, mm-hmm. the UK market, right?
Yeah.
And that's Warner Discovery, obviously. The scripts part intrigues me. I think that's where a lot of the leftover games could go, and maybe the streaming component from that either goes to ESPN Plus or to Paramount Plus. But the thing I'm excited about is you probably keep your broadcast games on CBS. They lose the SEC football rights after this season. So maybe even mid-afternoon in the fall and during the playoffs, you can broadcast games in really great windows on CBS Sports, on CBS, on over-the-air CBS, starting, let's say, at 4 o'clock Eastern time. And then you play into the if they're showing a Big Ten football game that week for the end of the season in the playoffs, because NWSL remains on this calendar, which is contrary to the international calendar. It also might be strategic getting ESPN involved. USL is launching their Super League in the coming seasons, and the USL Super League is going to run on the international calendar. It's going to run kind of contra calendar to NWSL. The assumption was, because USL is currently on ESPN, that ESPN would probably be the partner for the Super League. Maybe they won't be now. Maybe it'll be someone else. Maybe they go to Turner, for all we know. But yeah, I'm excited about this. We need to get more details, but it's also really important, Chris, at this point, I think, because we saw what happened in this Women's World Cup to not only to the United States, but to Canada also, who have a lot of players in NWSL. We saw how the countries that have players playing in La Femina in Spain or in the English league, the WSL, how much better those national teams did, the people playing in the French league. So I think it's important for NWSL to spread its wings. They're getting a lot of investment in the league. They're getting new owners. But there are questions about where it fits in kind of the larger women's football ecosystem, with the U.S. women's national team falling on hard times and the league, quite frankly, not being a destination league for foreign players anymore. So this is an important step. And maybe with the additional TV money, they can be competitive to get so that Sam Kerr doesn't leave the league, so that they can be competitive for players based in Europe. Because right now they're not. I know a lot of people listening will hate to hear that, because there seems to be you think there's denialism over MLS, Chris? There's even more denialism over NWSL and what's happened to the league and where the league is right now relative to the game in Europe. So I think this is very important.
What I find interesting is that in many ways that NWSL is going back to what MLS had. So MLS had many different TV partners, right? They had Fox, ESPN, Univision, and then within those divisions, then you had some games on ESPN Plus, you had some games on Unimas, you had some games on TUDN, FS2, FS1, even FoxSports.com. I mean, you go down the list, right? There's a long kind of laundry list of places that you could watch MLS games. And every week it was MLS fans saying, hey, where's the game? It's confusing. I don't know. And on the calendar, in terms of the scheduling, it's a headache. And then MLS moves to Apple TV Plus, all of the game. Well, actually, MLS Season Pass, sorry. MLS Season Pass, every single game, worldwide, easy. So now, to me, with Major League Soccer, there's no excuses, right? It's as easy as possible to find those games. You know, all of them are going to be on the same place without having to do much hunting or searching. And then NWSL is kind of moving from a Paramount Plus, CBS, CBS Sports Network, kind of a one home really for their games, moving to something that's going to be a long list again of places that you can watch those games. For us here at World Soccer Talk, it means more work trying to put together all the schedules and adding them to the website and to the app and writing about it and just making it easy as possible to help people find those games. But I do find it interesting that MLS and NWSL are going down similar paths in their trajectory.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Speaking of Apple and MLS Season Pass, this week was the launch of a new documentary series called Messi Meets America, which is exclusively available on Apple TV Plus. It's not available on MLS Season Pass, so if you subscribe to that, you have to sign up for Apple TV Plus, and sometimes they offer free trials. Otherwise, it's, I think, $7 a month to get it. It's been launched on Wednesday, October 11th. It's a three-part series. Kartik, I'm not sure if you've had a chance to watch it quite yet.
No.
So I did.
I watched the trailer.
Yeah.
That's all I saw.
So I did. So to me, this is fascinating, right? If you're a Messi fan, you'll love watching this three-part series, which is, it's going to be six episodes in total, but they're releasing episodes 1, 2, and 3 right away. And then 4, 5, and 6 will come in the subsequent weeks or months, depending on when they get those done. So if you're a Messi fan, it's great to watch, to go ahead and rewatch really what happened this past summer in the Leagues Cup. If you're an Inter Miami fan, it's a great way to go back and watch some of those highlights of that incredible story with them winning the Leagues Cup. If you're a fan of a different Major League Soccer club, there's probably slight interest in watching this. If you're not a fan of Major League Soccer and couldn't care less about Messi, you probably couldn't care less about watching this series. Having watched those three episodes, it really is, to me, what I feel it is really a puff piece. It's a documentary that's meant to really kind of hype up Messi and to encourage Apple TV Plus subscribers, after they've watched it, to go ahead and maybe sign up for MLS Season Pass, either for this season or for next season. But other than that, I don't think it's going to win any Academy Awards for Best Documentary Series or anything like that. It really, what it comes down to is highlights of this past summer in the Leagues Cup, of him joining the team, interviews with Tata Martino, Sergio Busquets, Jordi Alba, Leo Messi, and others within the kind of the MLS camp, and then highlights of what's happening in those games. And that's about it. It doesn't dive any deeper. It's not like some like just amazing behind the scenes footage. Yes, it talks about some of the youngsters that play with Inter Miami and kind of the path that they got to play on team and how great it is playing with Messi. But Messi is he's an introvert. But the big news, Kartik, so I watched episodes like 1, 2, and 3, and there's no mention of Phil Neville. There's mentions of how Inter Miami had a poor season before that and a poor record. There's zero mention of US Open Cup, not even a word. And at the end of the episode 3, where they talk about the Leagues Cup and they win the Leagues Cup, and then right at the end, they have a preview for episode 4, which is coming out whenever, you mean weeks or months from now. And the actual teaser for it is like, hey, there's only 12 games to go in the MLS season. We're getting really excited about can Inter Miami qualify for the MLS Cup playoffs. We're going to take it game by game, and that's it, the end. I'm like, wait a second. Like, right after that Leagues Cup final victory against Nashville, Inter Miami was right back in it with the U.S. Open Cup.
Yeah.
And not a single mention of it.
Before they played another MLS game. They played a semifinal game that weekend. Midweek,
right, against Cincinnati.
Yeah.
They won that game, which was a fantastic game, and then went on to ultimately lose in the final. So I had a chance to interview the executive producer from Messi Meets America. And I asked him, I said, we'll have a story at worldsoccertalk.com that goes into more detail. I asked him, like, I noticed in episodes 1, 2, and 3, there's no mention of US Open Cup. So in episode 4, I would expect there would be all this footage about the US Open Cup and how Inter Miami is really excited to try to win this competition and all the drama that goes into it. Is he going to play? Is he not? And the great game against Cincinnati, like a really exciting semifinal. So I said, episode 4 or 5 or 6 does show footage of the US Open Cup, right? And basically he dodged the question and said, okay, well, this documentary is focused on the team, on the club, on the MLS journey. And I said, okay, yes, I understand that Inter Miami is an MLS team, but you have to talk about the US Open Cup, right? This is a documentary about Messi Meets America, about Inter Miami, about the US Open Cup. And the crazy thing is, there's no mention of it. They're purposely, basically what the executive producer said was that the mission he was given was to go ahead and focus on Inter Miami's journey in MLS, and that's it. Kartik, I know a lot of listeners and viewers understand and know why they didn't cover the US Open Cup, but I'll throw it to you. Why would this Apple documentary, Messi Meets America, not even mention US Open Cup?
Because Soccer United Marketing marketed and held the media rights to the US Open Cup until last year's competition, 2022. US Soccer pulled those rights back and resold them themselves. I don't want to go through, it's been aired on CBS. The rights were originally sold to Turner, but CBS is now broadcasting it, but it's not a Soccer United Marketing property. For those of you who maybe haven't written or have not read our articles at World Soccer Talk now for a decade about this issue of Soccer United Marketing, Soccer United Marketing is the marketing arm of Major League Soccer. And for many years, U.S. Soccer used them as their marketing agency. The FMF, the Federación in Mexico, they still use Soccer United Marketing, which is why we have Leagues Cup, right? Because Liga MX is kind of married to Soccer United Marketing. But because the media rights and the sponsorship rights to the competition are no longer held by MLS, they have no interest in promoting the competition. And in fact, I don't want to get too deep down the rabbit hole, Chris. You could find more on this in previous podcasts or at worldsoccerdoc.com or at Beyond the 90, where my colleague Daniel Feuerstein has written extensively about this. The issue of MLS now trying to undermine the U.S. Open Cup in a very public manner has happened. So I think this documentary is part of that effort, because then they're just going to skip from the Leagues Cup final in Nashville, classic evening of football, to the quest to make the MLS playoffs, which means inevitably in episodes 4 through 6, Chris, they will skip the U.S. Open Cup final, which was hosted at Lockhart Stadium. They're going to miss that. They're going to just skip it, which is incredulous if they're trying to do a documentary about that club, about Messi in America, about... soccer is not like other sports in the U.S., right? I mean, the same club that competes in Major League Soccer competes in the U.S. Open Cup. Same thing with the USL clubs and NPSL clubs. It's the same club. It's not a separate, they don't have a, it's not like the university, Florida Atlantic University, which is down the road from me. It's not like they have a separate basketball team and separate football team, right? Separate soccer team. It's not like that. It's the same club. It's the same players. So It's unbelievable, really.
Yeah, it'd be like the Premier League doing a documentary about Manchester City's last season, winning the treble, and then skipping over, not even talking about the FA Cup, or not even talking about the UEFA Champions League, and just focusing it on Manchester City winning the actual league, and that's it. It's incredulous. I think that's the word that you used. But to me, it's also, in terms of what Major League Soccer is doing here, it's childish. I mean, so Messi Meets America is commissioned by Apple and in conjunction with Major League Soccer. So this is Apple and MLS, you know, putting the money, putting the emphasis into producing this. But to only tell part of the story and to purposely not ignore one of the big stories from this, one of the oldest soccer competitions in the world. I mean, 100 plus years of history in the United States. And we never mentioned how good of a job that CBS Sports did with the coverage of the US Open Cup final and some of the footage of, yesteryears, going back through the decades as far as all the history.
I guess you won't see that in the documentary. So we're going to have to educate the public about that.
Yeah, it's... I don't know. To me, it's childish, right? I mean, look, like, how would it hurt Apple and MLS to mention? Even the episodes 4, 5, and 6 haven't come out yet, so they could always edit them or change them and adapt them if there is a vocal kind of response to them not even talking about US Open Cup. Maybe they'll change it by the time we see episodes 4, 5, and 6. But what's the big deal, right? But I think at the heart of it, Kartik, I think to me is ProRail. Is it brings up that ugly topic that a lot of Major League Soccer executives don't want to talk about, is that here we have an open competition, Major League Soccer, which is a closed system, but an open competition where any club from any league in the United States can go through the qualification path and try to get into this competition and go deep into this competition and play against MLS teams, USL teams, etc. And to me, I think that's the heart of it. Maybe it's not ProRail, maybe it's open system versus closed system. And by actually showing the US Open Cup, it opens up question marks. But I don't know, to me, it's ridiculous that they would even do this, or we even contemplate doing it. Hopefully other people will call them out on it, not just
us. They have to acknowledge, I guess, that there are other clubs in the same markets. Like, for example, the club I support, the club I used to work for, Miami FC, we played Inter Miami in their first match of the Open Cup and went to penalty kicks, right?
Right.
Was really kind of a famous, this goes back to your point about Phil Neville, famous coaching matchup. Phil Neville, one of the Neville brothers against Anthony Pulis, who was our manager at the time, who was the son of Tony Pulis. Mm-hmm. That's a great story in itself, but in all of that, they don't want to highlight. But they would have to acknowledge there's another club in town, in the same town where they have this MLS team. So that would be, might be one of the motivations.
Yeah, it just, because what I mentioned to the executive producer, I said to him, I said, this is really bizarre that you have a documentary about a team, about a journey for this MLS club, and part of that journey includes not even mentioning at all the words US Open Cup and not even talking about coming up the next game and how excited the team is to be playing in, basically kind of the semifinals of this major competition and playing into the final. Ultimately, they lost the final. You win some, you lose some, but it's so sad. It's funny. It's so sad. That they would be this juvenile to actually skip that. I still can't believe it. All right, Kartik, let's move on to listener mailbag. We've got a bunch of feedback from our listeners, as always, and viewers, of course. This is kind of catching up because it's been a couple of weeks since we did the last episode. But Glenn says, in regards to Welcome to Wrexham, he says, you just spent several minutes telling us how great Wrexham is because it includes so many human interest stories. But then you complain about Apple trying to turn Major League Soccer players into characters and celebrities. Isn't this the same thing? I agree about the AirPods placement, though. And Glenn follows up to say, I didn't take the comment to mean he thought putting headphones on them during the warm-up would make them celebrities, rather that they should be working on ancillary content to turn the players into characters you want to root for. And I think to me that that's the big difference, is that the characters that you want to root for in Welcome to Wrexham is the local community, is the Wayne from the Turf Pub, or Kerry, who's in charge of the disabilities officer, or Rosie Hughes, who's one of the star players on the Wrexham women's team, or the Declan Swans, the local rock band who are playing songs about Wrexham, and so on. And so Sean, who's kind of a really passionate fan, having a difficulty, recently divorced, etc. To me, those are the characters. Those are real people. So, I mean, kind of that's my take in terms of it. Yes, there's a human interest story, and we've got some human interest from the Wrexham point of view, where they're being interviewed and we get to know those players better. But by MLS players, yes, I would like to know them better too, in terms of some of these personalities and characters. But the way they're going about doing it, or the way that Apple wants to do it, seems to be really fake. I mean, it just seems to be basically inauthentic.
Well, it is inauthentic is the word, and that was the word I was going to use, Chris. One thing that in my numerous conversations with journalists from abroad who have covered MLS or American soccer, you know, even if it's the U.S. national team, in some large dose, the word that comes to them is that they often, that the thought that comes to them is that American players are very safe. They're very conservative in how they present themselves. They're very by the book. So in order to create characters, and there are exceptions, right? Clint Dempsey, Clint Mathis, those are two exceptions that come to mind when you talk about American men's players. There have been a few others. Not many, truthfully. Not many. So anything you do to make a character out of kind of the safe American player who gives very safe interviews, doesn't say anything controversial, is always parroting the same thing as management is parroting in their public statements, or the Federation, right? Backing the Federation all the time. These labor disputes in MLS tend to be, I'll get into the players' union another time. Maybe now's not the time for it. But the point is, it will come across as inauthentic because it's not genuine. In addition, MLS, the biggest problem with Major League Soccer, and this may be why they don't want to talk about the U.S. Open Cup, because plainly, clubs like Chattanooga FC and Detroit City have more going on in their community than most MLS clubs. These clubs don't mean a whole lot to their communities, with some exceptions. There are exceptions. Every time I say this, there are exceptions. I think of two clubs, Sporting Kansas City and Real Salt Lake, that have done really good jobs in their community and now are part of the fabric of those communities. But in general, MLS clubs are not, whereas football clubs in Europe and in South America are, whereas college sports programs in the United States are, whereas baseball teams in the United States tend to be part of the heartbeat of the cities they play in. So it's very difficult to authentically do this when the material isn't there. With Wrexham, the material's there, the community and the authenticity.
Yeah, I think part of it too is that Major League Soccer is very controlling. So I think it's a very tightly run ship in terms of messaging, you know, making sure that everyone's basically on script, everyone's saying the right things. So I think sometimes the players feel, I mean, it's a very sterile organization, so sometimes it feels that you're not getting the honest opinions from people. And when you do get those honest opinions from people that have played in Major League Soccer, such as Zlatan, right, or others, then it becomes a big story, because it's like, hey,
Zlatan in America would have been a great documentary series, by the way.
Yeah,
but they didn't do one.
But I think overall though too, it's just, it's very controlled environment, so I think sometimes the players probably a little bit more guarded. I think there's some really good players that have some really good stories. I'm not sure what those are. And I think those need to come out more. But when you have public relations controlling the messaging and trying to play it safe, you get what you end up with, which is a very inauthentic, not a lot of characters, and it kind of a very, basically safe and quiet space and kind of boring too sometimes in terms of the player interviews, not really getting much depth there or much honesty or much openness really. All right, let's move on. The next up is Robert. Robert says, in regards to the Welcome to Wrexham, just some feedback about that. He says, another great story is the rise of Notts County. If they can keep up their early season form, they may move up to League One. I believe it has been since about 1984 that they were last in the top league. Problem with funds prevented them from staying up. They have no celebrities providing money, but over the last period, they have had competent management. So there is a chance that they could make and stay in League One. The team across the River Trent looks like they will stay in the big time. So Nottingham's football fans are happy. Also, you have both said that you watch up to 12 to 14 hours of soccer some days. How do you do that? I usually watch a game or two and then the highlights of the games are missed. That being MLS, some EPL games, if it seems interesting, and Bundesliga highlights. So Kartik, before we talk about Notts County, which is really one of the stories of League Two so far this season, what about you? I mean, in terms of, you mean, like, so Robert's mentioning about sometimes 12 to 14 hours watching soccer, and I know you have a busy life, you know, family, different things going on. How is that possible? Is it still possible?
It's only possible on the weekends. Weekdays, quite frankly, I don't watch much football. I don't watch Champions League. I'd like to. And I do watch some football league during the week, right? Championship games, if they're going on. But I just don't have the time with work and the different projects I work on and family, et cetera, to be watching even maybe an hour of football or soccer during the week. Very little. I'll catch the scores and the highlights of games for the most part. But on the weekends, it's different. 12 to 14 hours, yeah, I guess that's about right. Yeah, you talk about what, let's say Eastern time, 7 a.m., you wake up, you get that cup of coffee, that first Premier League match. Bundesliga kicks off at 9:30. There'll be a La Liga match going on around the same time. There's the block of 3 p.m. Kickoffs, which are 10 a.m. here in the East Coast of the U.S. Premier League, the late Premier League game, the late Bundesliga game. Serie A kicks off. I'm usually watching a Serie A game that kicks off around 2:45 our time. Yeah, that's 12 hours. And then USL, I mean, Miami FC, the club I follow, I watch all their games, and they play Saturday nights. This weekend, we're in Sacramento. It's a 10 p.m. Eastern time start. If we win, we're in the playoffs. So it's, yeah. So this weekend, it might be 16 hours, actually, because of the West Coast game.
Yeah, and for a Saturday night, I mean, it could be, you know, it could be NWSL game, it could be an MLS game, it could be a Liga MX game, it could be, you mean, USM, international, USMNT or USWNT. So I'm on the same page as you on weekends, 12 hours easy, and it's enjoyable to me. Sunday's the same way too. I mean, it's like, you mean, sometimes I'm doing things around the house at the same time. I might be doing dishes or but I'm still plugged in. But for me personally, it's my job. It's my full-time career. So on the weekends, I have to stay on top of it. Weekdays for me, I'm still watching games too. So trying to combine working on worldsoccertalk.com, the website, as well as prepping for the podcast or working on other projects and managing the team, etc. So as well as trying to do my own investigative reporting, as you are too, Kartik, and writing opinion pieces, and then watching games. And yeah, 12 to 14 hours it is pretty easy. But sometimes I have to take a break. Sometimes it just like, you mean, enough's enough. I have to go outside for a few hours and get some fresh air or go to the beach or something, just so that there's no burnout, or at least try not to get burned out. Notts County, Kartik, do you think they can go all the way and get promoted?
Yes. In fact, I do think that they'll finish in the top seven, so they'll at the very least be in a playoff spot. I think they have a strong enough squad this season. Wrexham are going to be thereabouts. Wrexham won't be in the top three, but they could be in the top seven. But I think Notts County have a chance to stay in the top three, and almost certainly in the top seven. Stockport, very, very good. They're on their heels right now. But yeah, it's a great story also because they were the oldest professional club in the world in terms of continuity and professional divisions when they got relegated a few years ago. So obviously that record's gone. But they spent more time in professional leagues since the rules of football were codified in the mid-1800s, mid to late 1800s, than any other club in the history of world football. This is the other point I've made about Everton. Everton, again, fighting relegation, although they've had a couple of good results recently. Everton have spent more years in the top flight of a European league than any club in the world, in Europe, in the history. So that's why, for people who say, oh, well, Leeds is a big club and they got relegated and this one's a big club and Nottingham Forest are all big clubs. Well, yeah, but there's a reason why some of us get really nervous about Everton being relegated in a way we don't about other clubs. And Notts County, when they fell out of the Football League a few years ago, it was kind of a similar feeling. So I agree with Rob, really happy they're back.
Yeah, before, like earlier on in this podcast, we talked about Peacock and some of the issues they've had. Paramount Plus and CBS Sports has had some issues this year with NWSL coverage. Some crazy things happening to the coverage. A lot of complaints about that. ESPN, we haven't talked about their coverage in terms of technical issues, but the Bundesliga 2, especially, there's been a lot of problems, as well as the Goal Arena, which is the whip around show.
Oh, Goal Arena's been a disaster.
Every time I've tuned in, unfortunately, I don't think I've had any broadcast where it's been flawless. It's been technical issues.
And they did not show Goal Arena this past week, if you didn't notice.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. I couldn't find it. Maybe they did show it, but it wasn't where it normally was, and I think maybe they just dropped it.
Yeah, or maybe...
Maybe they'll fix it after the international break. We'll see.
Maybe. So, yeah, Martin... in regards to the Bundesliga and Apple, says Martin says, I listened with interest to your breakdown of Eddie Q's interview by GQ magazine. My takeaway from that would be that the Bundesliga would be the last league Apple would want to be that would be compatible with, and vice versa. Given how resistant to change the fans and supporters of Bundesliga are, fans got rid of money making for TV companies, not supporters. They got rid of Monday games in Germany and rally against certain sponsors and investors. This is opposite of Major League Soccer's or Premier League's kowtowing to broadcasters or owners' demands. So my hope as a Bundesliga fan is that they stick with ESPN Plus or preferably move to Paramount Plus, given ESPN's recent trend of bad streams. Apple would be my last choice after hearing your analysis of the Eddie Q interview. Frank says, in regards to Peacock and NBC, Frank says, I suppose the substandard matches are the Fulhams against Crystal Palace mid-table matches that Americans are not tuning into. That is slightly more than nobody is tuning into unless you're from that London area. I know what NBC wants to do. They want their cake and to eat it too. They obviously want you to have the app and the cable subscription. What does the Premier League think of NBC's manipulations of their content? No matter, money is in the bank. Are they aware that a large American market is not interested in Luton Town versus Sheffield United? That the idea of a Super League structure becomes all the more alluring after having spent a weekend refusing to watch the splendid run and cross majesty of England's after six on the table clubs? Is the Premier League remotely interested in all their content being available seamlessly and easily? I suppose we may know next contract negotiation. And Frank is obviously upset there too about a lot of the games being on Peacock and having to have a subscription to, a cable network that or a streaming network that has USA Network as well as NBC over the air, and then also having to subscribe to Peacock in order to have access to all these games. But then NBC's basically putting a lot of the games, maybe the Luton Towns or Sheffield United's on Peacock, etc. Kartik, I have a feeling you have a different take on this one.
Yeah, I don't know if maybe it's because I live in Florida, but Fulham is a really bad example to use about Americans not being interested. I know more Fulham fans than I know Manchester City fans in the U.S. I know more Fulham fans than I know... I know a lot of Spurs fans. I know more Fulham fans probably than I know Arsenal fans, really. when I think about it, in the U.S., most of them are in Florida, and I realize the ownership group is from here, right? Shad Khan is from Jacksonville area. Tony Khan is from the Jacksonville area, but boy, that's a weird example. And then Crystal Palace, I know interest in them here because John Tester lives in Hope Sound, in my neck of the woods, close to where you used to live, Chris. So, but Fulham, there are a lot of Fulham fans. I mean, even some of the really prominent people in American soccer, Peter Wilt, I mean, one of the greatest executives in the sport in this country, is a Fulham fan. So I think he's interested. Now, in terms of Luton Town versus Sheffield United, yeah, there's probably not that much interest. One thing NBC does do a good job of, again, maybe more from the production standpoint than from the studio analyst standpoint, is build context in the league, build context in the importance of every game in the league. And it's kind of the way you see college sports conferences presented if you watch college basketball, which I do. I don't watch college football anymore, but college basketball, which I watch a lot of, And I focus on one conference, which is the ACC. But the way the broadcasts are always presented are kind of in a league context. Well, yeah, maybe Duke is playing Miami at the top of the conference. But really, you know, Georgia Tech and Louisville, blah, 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 blah. You know, they're at the bottom. Same thing with the way NBC presents the Premier League. I mean, the relegation fight is really important to the context they build. Roger Bennett does those promoted specials every year, right? Where he talks to the newly promoted clubs. NBC showed the Luton Town story, which was a documentary, which I had already seen, actually, but by the time they showed it on USA or Peacock, wherever they showed it, when they got promoted. But really good thing to build the context. So I think a lot of what NBC is doing is building greater context in the league. That also, Chris, is a buffer against the Super League. So I'm not saying it's all altruistic what they're doing. Part of it is, okay, we need to build context in the other 14 teams in the given year, because obviously it changes every year because of relegation and promotion, so that people are Premier League fans. They're not just fans of Arsenal or Manchester City and are going to follow Arsenal and Manchester City out the door to the Super League.
Yeah, I'm not sure what Frank wants, though, too, because, I mean, there's a lot of people that want all the games available on TV, which is impossible, right? There's too many games to put on TV. You mean they don't want to subscribe to Peacock. They just want to watch the games on TV. You mean, but there's, you mean, 10 games a weekend, and a lot of those games are happening at the same time, so that's not possible. And then there's a lot of people that want all the games available on Peacock so that they can go and subscribe to them there. That's completely possible, but Comcast, as the owner of the rights,
it's a cable company.
It's a cable company, and they want you to subscribe to cable service and to streaming. His example of Fulham against Crystal Palace, Kartik, I can guarantee you that there'd be more people watching Crystal Palace against Fulham than there would be for a Major League Soccer game, right? So
yeah, again, Fulham is the wrong team to pick. If he picked, I don't know, Brentford, Crystal Palace versus Brentford, he might have more of a case.
Yeah, I don't know that. I mean, going to these Premier League fan fests, a couple of years ago I was in Miami Beach and there was a lot of Sheffield United fans there. Going to the most recent one last year or earlier this year in Orlando, there were Brentford fans there. To me, the Premier League, Frank mentions like, hey, would the Premier League be upset in terms of the lack of accessibility of these games? For me, I would argue it's the opposite. You mean, yes, they would like to have more games on television, but many of these, So for example, this past weekend, Arsenal against Man City was on Peacock exclusively. That had the third most streamed Premier League match in the history of US television, basically. So I think about 870,000 people watched that game on Peacock, which is an incredible number. You mean, if Major League Soccer got that on television, they'd be hooping and hollering. So I think the Premier League's fine. I mean, more and more people are moving to streaming anyway. It could be a lot worse, right? It could be NWSL, where you have to have a few different subscriptions in order to watch all the games. Here, at least with the Premier League, you can watch the games on Peacock and USA Network and NBC over there.
But I guess the point of contrast is very clearly La Liga and Bundesliga, where if you have ESPN Plus, you get every game.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've been lucky because the local ABC station in the Miami-Fort Lauderdale market, they love to preempt Bundesliga matches. They don't preempt La Liga matches, by the way. But they, I mean, maybe it's the way they perceive this market, that people aren't interested in German football or there are no Bayern fans here. I don't know, but I've had to go to ESPN Plus on multiple occasions when games have been on ABC because of the way the broadcast situation. So I can kind of understand it from that perspective, but the Premier League is a much more valuable television property with a lot more viewers in the United States than La Liga, Bundesliga, or Serie A. Really more than those leagues combined, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, whether people like it or not, you know, so I get a lot of people, you know, getting angry constantly about why is there so much more Premier League coverage? Oh, all these people, they just watch the Premier League and, you know, they're this or they're that. Well, that's responding to the market. If you don't like the free market, then do something about it. It's all based on consumerism. You want more people watching Serie A or La Liga? Advocate for those leagues to make changes. I mean, this is a free capitalist country. It's not a socialist or communist country. So people watch the Premier League because they're interested in it. Mm-hmm. This is the bottom line.
Yep, exactly. And then the last comment is from Chris about the Dutch league, their Divisie. Chris says, after watching the Ajax against Feyenoord match recently, I have to say that I have some major concerns about the future of the Dutch league. The way that Ajax has collapsed the last few years is very worrying because it shows that the homegrown talent that they are famous for producing has dried up. It also shows how badly Ajax has been run, especially when it comes to transfers. This is not a good look for the league because Ajax is a club that most people think of when they talk about Dutch football, and to see them in this bad of a state makes the league look weak. The behavior of the Ajax fans is also not a good look for the league, especially if the Eredivisie wants to market itself globally. Now, yeah, I mean, the Dutch league definitely wants to market itself globally. It's tried in the US to market itself several times in terms of, you mean, having games on TudoNA, a bunch of different kind of really obscure streaming platforms, and now on ESPN Plus. I mean, to watch the league, I wish I had more time to watch the Dutch league because I find it really entertaining. The fans are intense, sometimes over the top, but the level of football is good. But again, similar to the Dutch, to the French league and to the Bundesliga, is oftentimes those games in the Dutch league too are happening at the same time as I'm watching the Premier League or I'm watching my team Swansea in the Championship. So I just can't watch, even can't pay as much attention as I would like. What's your thoughts, Kartik, on Chris's comments about Ajax especially?
Yeah, I agree with him completely. I think it's a bad look for the league. There has been more talk in my football circles with the professional scouts and agents I talk to, which is frequent. I do a lot of that, that the Belgian league is now the destination league. They want to get a young American kid over, or just a young player in general, that they represent, talking to agents, over into a positive situation for player development in within the European Union. So they get their work permits, stuff like that. The Belgian league has eclipsed the Dutch league just in the last few years for that. And part of that is the situation at Ajax, some of the other situations around the Dutch league, some of the fan issues in the Netherlands. So that I never thought I'd hear. I never thought I'd hear people in the game comparing the Belgian and people who are power in the game comparing the Belgian league favorably with the Dutch when compared to the Dutch league. But that's what's happening. So yeah, Chris is spot on. There's a lot going on there and problems for the Dutch league. But you know, doors closed for one, doors open for another, and the Belgian league, which I quite frankly don't follow very closely, but have been motivated now from talking to people to maybe keep an eye on at least the table. He seems to be emerging as the in that void.
So listeners and viewers, we definitely want to get your feedback, get your opinions, maybe some of your thoughts in regards to some of these questions that other viewers and listeners have brought up. So there's a bunch of different ways to get in touch with us. We'd love to read those comments out on air. You can go to the website, worldsoccertalk.com. click on podcasts and then leave your comments in the most recent episode. You can go to Twitter, X, and that's at World Soccer Talk, and send us your comments that way. Facebook.com/World Soccer Talk, YouTube.com/World Soccer Talk, email, which is web@WorldSoccerTalk.com, and voicemail, 561-247-4625. And we can play those voicemails on future episodes. So whether it's talking about soccer, streaming, or ProRel, or anything you want to bring up, feel free to send those in. We'd love to read those out on a future episode. Kartik, before we go, has there been anything you've been watching this last couple of weeks that you've been either in person or on television or streaming that you've been hooked on when it comes to soccer? And it doesn't have to be a game. It could be a documentary series. It could be like what have you been watching that you've enjoyed the most?
I mean, I've been watching Miami FC's playoff push in USL. I've been watching, well, Welcome to Wrexham. I mean, that's what I enjoyed the most. I know that's people are tired of hearing, a lot of people who listen are tired of hearing about that. But yeah, that's actually been probably the thing that has hooked me the most, to the point where I've watched a couple of the episodes multiple times. I guess made make me a junkie or a bingy or whatever. But no, I think I'm really kind of compelled by the start Ipswich Town has had in the championship, and talked about this frequently when I've been on TalkSport, and I think they have a chance to go up and be a league higher than Norwich for the first time in a long time, their local rivals. Norwich has been in and out of the Premier League, although Norwich has started the season fairly well also. Norwich has been in and out of the Premier League for the bulk of the last 15 years, whereas Ipswich has fallen on some really hard times. And then the other thing that's been going on, quite frankly, is a lot of time on the phone, talking to sources about all of this mess in American lower division soccer. Not going to get into it on this podcast, but that's consumed a lot of my time, including talking to player agents and executives in the game. So the soccer wars never end in the U.S.
Yeah, and Kartik, author of the book Soccer Wars, is the ultimate expert on that. For me, the two things that have stood out for me the last couple of weeks watching is, personally, Swansea City gone on a great run in the championship, near the bottom, now at the mid-table. But the other thing that stood out for me that I've been hooked on is, and this is thanks to Welcome to Wrexham, but is Dorking Wanderers. And yeah. I'm not sure if you've seen this, Kartik, but they have a YouTube channel, and they have got a whole documentary series. I mean, tens of episodes. It's called A Bunch of Amateurs. And it's the story. It's kind of game by game. It feels a lot like Welcome to Wrexham in terms of, and this came out well before Welcome to Wrexham, but it's their story. But really kind of the centerpiece of this is Mark White, who's the manager of Dorking Wanderers. And he talks about how they took this team basically from a local pub team, like a Sunday league team, up through the ranks of the English football system, all the way now to the National Conference, the National League. And I mean, just one division away from the same division that Wrexham's in now, League Two. But watching this is absolutely fascinating in terms of his interactions with referees, which they film, and you get to hear the referees talking casually, just kind of that was quite different. But also in terms of him in the locker room and his analysis he's giving, or his halftime speeches or pre-match speeches, etc. And just the day-to-day running of this club. And the great thing about this for me too is that I have no idea in terms, I'm not following Dorking Wanderers every match and knowing what the results are. So when I go back into some of the older episodes, I don't know if they win or lose or tie this game or how they did that season. But if you get a chance, especially during the international break, if you do want to watch something that's going to, it's not for everyone, but I think it's enthralling. Dorking Wanderers, A Bunch of Amateurs on YouTube is highly recommended. Kartik, where can listeners and viewers find your content on Beyond the 90 And what also have are you guys up to in terms of coverage?
Yeah, beyondthe90.substack.com. It's become really heavy on Soccer Wars, right? Soccer Wars in terms of NISA, NPSL, USL, and MLS Next Pro. And this is the thing I found with this, Chris. I mean, you start a service to kind of write and deliver a newsletter, and you find what you launch it to do, which was really to kind of talk tactics in European football, is not what people are interested in. There are millions of other people doing that. Not millions, but, you know, there are lots of other content. And then you find this niche, and you look at the metrics for what people are opening and what people aren't, and it's universally... you could write something about the tactical breakdown of, I don't know, Arsenal Man City this past weekend and send something out about NPSL, and the NPSL thing is getting more, far more open. So it's just finding the niche. So, you know, for better or for worse, I think that site's now become turned into a lower division US site.
Yeah, which is great. I mean, because it's much needed, even in terms of, there's a hunger for information about those leagues, what's happening, and those teams and those stories, because and that's the thing though too. I mean, like a Dorking Wanderers, right? Is like to me, like I'd love to see some American clubs follow something similar to that and actually start filming day to day what life is like at a lower league club in the United States, how challenging it is, what they have to do, some of the issues that they have that they face, and bring those cameras behind the scenes, you mean, to some of those meetings, if it's, I don't know, NPSL or USL or NISA, and actually film what's going on. Because I think to me, that'd be fascinating, because visually, I mean, we see the games from time to time, but behind the scenes, I don't know about you, but I don't see or know what's going on visually.
No, there's not enough content out there at all. I mean, it's and unfortunately, this is something that I think has spread from MLS and US soccer through the American soccer pyramid, where people don't want to take chances. They're very conservative with how they present themselves. They're very controlling. The leagues are. This is a general problem in US soccer. Leagues control things, not teams. Leagues control stuff, not clubs. And we did a summit in Chattanooga a couple of years ago where this was the main topic, is, you know, clubs need to be independent and free themselves from leagues. And it's not all about pro rel. That's a big part of it. But part of it is empowering clubs, even if they're stuck in a closed system. Right now, there's no club empowerment. You don't have the liberty, the autonomy to go do a documentary like that. You can't even do a thing like Welcome to Wrexham, quite frankly, with US clubs. Because there'll be some authority in the league you play in that gets upset about it. So and cracks down on you. So that's a really good point.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, until next week, until we do another one of this. Hopefully, the video came across pretty well for those who had a chance to watch it on video, and then for audio, of course, you get that. But for the video, we'll have that on youtube.com/worldsoccertalk if you do want to watch. Us smiling and laughing and talking about a lot of these topics that we love to cover week in, week out. So Kartik, on behalf of everyone, what are you going to do this week? And what should the listeners do next week?
Enjoy your football and get ready for another good week of club football. And honestly, we're getting to the point in Euro qualifying that I am paying attention, so I'm not checked out this international break like previous ones. Focusing on Euro qualifying, the rest I'm not concerned about.
Having said that, Kartik, I mean, it is that time of the year too when it's international break, which means ESPN Plus will have more League 1, League 2 games on there. So yeah. And there's always lower league football from around the world, or football from around the world in general. Major League Soccer is playing through the international break, so there's plenty of club soccer teams to choose from. So on that note, enjoy your football.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.